Welcome to Podcast Insider. This is episode number 179, and I have another special guest host this week. Hello, Kate from the Blueberry Pro production team.
Hey, Mike. I'm good. How are you doing today?
So far, so good. It's been a little scrambled. This whole week's been nuts, and so I call this Monday part four, but really it's Thursday.
Oh, you know, I'm right there with you. There must be something in the air because this has been the longest Monday ever.
Yeah. Well, what it is I think that, you know, now that the whole first part of the year is started and everybody's kind of gotten into the groove, now they're getting back into podcasting. And there's just a lot of things coming up. Podcast Academy is a new thing that was announced at Podcast Movement Evolutions in Los Angeles. That seems to me to be a big thing, you know, with a lot of the corporate casters, as I call it. And it caused a little controversy. I know you have a lot to say about that, but the controversy basically was that they, everybody thought it was replacing the Academy of Podcasters, who has the Hall of Fame, and it's not necessarily. The thing with the Hall of Fame was that in 2019 they just didn't have enough money to put it on, so that's why there was no 2019 class, but they do plan on bringing it back. I don't know the exact plans, but what do you think of this organization now that you've read through some of this stuff?
Well, I'm still not a fan, and I'm not a fan for two reasons. First, we needed to plan better. As independent podcast supporters, we needed to plan that Podcasters Hall of Fame a little more effectively than we did. Because we've left this vacuum for the Podcast Academy to come in and basically usurp the space where independent podcasters can thrive.
Right. This is kind of an initiative by, was it Wondery and
The major corporate ones and
All the big company ones.
Right. And God bless the big company ones and all of the money that they can throw at things. And you know what? Throw your weight behind the existing platforms. Throw that weight behind the Academy of Podcasters Hall of Fame so that we're a little bit more inclusive. I really think that having two different award bodies, that's one speaking to the corporate podcasts and one speaking to the independent podcasts, really will create a more divisive atmosphere rather than an inclusive atmosphere. And, you know, calling out the Academy of Podcasters and the Hall of Fame, why have we fallen so flat on our face there? We've failed there. Why haven't, I mean, they knew in 2018 that there wasn't going to be enough money to do 2019. So did I see a big push to fundraise, GoFundMe, crowdfunding? No. I watched people walk away.
Yeah. And then, you know, though that was an initiative more or less by the people that started Podcast Movement. And yeah, I think maybe, you know, that got a little bit waylaid. They used to have regular awards as well. And that kind of dropped off a couple of years before anyway. But, you know, of course, Todd, our CEO here, he started the People's Choice Podcast Awards back in 2005. And, you know, they're still going. And so there's lots of award shows. There's probably too many.
I love this. Oh, this is one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of Todd. The People's Choice Awards have so much more weight and value as an industry award than any corporate award. Just even in movies, the People's Choice Awards for movies carry more weight with me than the Oscars or the Golden Globes. I don't want the industry to be self-congratulatory. I want to appeal to the listeners, to the audience, and say, who do you like best? That's where the real impact of a show shines.
Right. Well, we'll put in a little plug here. If you go over to podcastawards.com, you can sign up to be considered for a podcast award over there. Nominations are open. So you can encourage your fans and listeners to go over and nominate your show. Of course, this show is not going to be eligible because, you know, we're attached to the owner of the other awards. So, you know, hey, whatever.
Yeah, right. But, so we can't do that.
Right. But, you know, this whole academy, it looks like they're going to be doing some other stuff. So hopefully we can influence them a little bit to reach out a little more to the independents. And, you know, because I hate seeing this big chasm. You know, the beauty of podcasting is that, you know, the guy in the basement next to the water heater has just as much opportunity to hit it big as some of these big corporate ones. He doesn't have the money to throw at it, but if he's making good content, or she or whatever, you know, anybody, you know, they do have the same choice and the same options for distribution and all that stuff. So,
exactly. Exactly. And you can DIY it. I don't always recommend it, but you can DIY it. And the thing that I love best about podcasting, as you said, it gives everybody a voice on a global stage.
Yep, yep, and you can be heard everywhere. You know, even my little podcast from up here in the middle of the woods in Traverse City, Michigan. You know, I get people downloading it from, you know, Russia and China and Bangladesh and some island out in the Pacific.
Exactly, exactly. And the entire podcast industry, as we know it, has been built because of the independent podcasters. They did it first. They're continuing to do it. Corporate media said, oh, there's money to be made in here. Let's get in.
And, you know, and that's good to a certain extent.
It's good to a certain extent.
Let's try to keep the gatekeepers out. That's my
right. Exactly. No gatekeepers.
So how would you like to work for Apple?
I love Apple.
Yeah. Apple's looking for a head of podcaster relations. Basically, that position, it sounds like, is, you know, reaching out to the podcast creators. From what I saw on, where is that? Oh yeah, Jen wrote that up over at Podcaster News. Go check that out. And but yeah, they're just looking for someone to, you know, be the face of Apple to the independent, or well, not independent, but all podcasters in their ecosystems.
Well, I just think it's interesting that Apple is building out this infrastructure that all of the other major podcast platforms have. And it makes me wonder, are they finally acknowledging the pressure of the industry? And have they realized that their position as the industry stalwart, the industry leader, is being seriously threatened? Because Spotify is right up their dress now.
Oh, yeah. You know, but the thing is everybody, you know, says Spotify, they're gaining listeners, they're gaining market share, they're gaining this, they're gaining that. That doesn't mean Apple's losing anything.
No, but it means that they have the chance of losing that market share because Spotify is getting so strong.
Yeah, but they're losing market share, but the numbers of people listening on the Apple platform, on any other platform, is still going up. Mm-hmm. So there's more people per month listening on Apple than there was a month prior. It's just Spotify is picking up these, you know, hopefully new people that have not been in podcasting. And, you know, some people say Spotify's ruining podcasting. You know, they are doing things differently, but, hey, you know, that's...
There's plenty of room still in this marketplace.
You know, as we always say, we don't care how you listen, as long as you listen.
I don't care where you get your stuff. Exactly. Where you can go everywhere and be everywhere everyone listens. So there's no excuse to not be heard.
Yep. Another beauty of RSS and the indie podcasters.
Exactly. Back to the indies.
Yes. So let's see. Next story I have here is Staples is installing podcast studios in their concept stores. I think it's mostly in Massachusetts right now. But they do plan on taking this nationwide if it all works out. They're really trying to do kind of a maker space sort of thing. So it's not just podcasting. It's not just this other thing. But, you know, you could buy a copy paper on Amazon. So, you know, they're not going to be able to keep making their major money from doing that kind of thing. So, you know, they're trying to reach out. And like I said, they've got the first three stores, I believe, out in Massachusetts. I think Super Joe Pardo, there we go. He actually recorded a podcast. He was one of the first ones to record a podcast in one of those stores. So that was pretty cool. Friend of the show.
Oh, excellent. Hi, Joe Pardo. I just think it's really interesting news, and I think it's an interesting way for a retail space to drive traffic into their store, because you're right. Amazon has taken over the world. I can order my pens and printer ink and staples from them and not leave my chair. However, I can buy a $99 Behringer podcast kit and start my show from home too.
Certainly.
I don't have to pay, you know, $300 in a membership and have to edit my show. It's interesting news for me because it exemplifies really several points. Bringing the podcast into the retail space, like I just said, but that's just one part of the equation because an audio file isn't a podcast. And I think Blueberry should approach Staples and say, you need pro production.
Yes.
Because not everyone wants to edit and produce their show. Even with, they use Spreaker's cool editing tool, which is a really cool editing tool for editing on the fly. And I really admire the idea. And there, the article talks about having podcast pros on staff to help people. Great in theory.
Last time I went into Staples to buy some computer equipment, their computer equipment experts were, you know how that was. They're sales guys.
Exactly. Oh. And don't you think it's going to lead people down a really dark path that ultimately wastes their money?
It could. Very well could.
Yeah. Sure. So just like a podcast, an audio file isn't a podcast without proper support and strategy isn't going to be the successful tool that Staples customers, I think, will believe it could be. Because there's more to it than that.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I think might be cool about it is, say you have a show with, you know, four or five of your friends, you know, whatever, and, you know, you don't really have a space at your house to do that. That might be the cool thing to do. You know, you go, okay, on Tuesday nights, we're going to book that room over at Staples. It's, supposedly set up properly for doing multiple hosts or whatever and all that. Or say you're a VO, you want to do some voiceovers and, you know, your home studio isn't quite as good as that. And you might want to go do that. You know, there's a lot of things you can do with an audio studio, you know, somewhere else that you really maybe not be able to do on your own. But then again, you can go buy that Behringer kit or, you know, one of those USB microphones and you're in business anyway. So.
Right. And Staples is advertising this because they're working through VoxNest.
Right.
And so they're offering distribution and setup and those sorts of services with their and I'm using Air Bunny podcast or Air Bunny quotes with their podcast pros trying to, and I'm just as big a fan of the KISS theory as everybody else, but you can oversimplify something into failure. So, and I think that's what Staples is on the road to doing. So I just, you know, go give it a try. Those of you in Boston and Massachusetts who want to check this out and go do things, let us know how it works. And if you need help, shameless plug, if you need help, Blueberry Pro Productions, come on, we've got you.
Yeah, blueberrypro.com.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's not the last time we're going to hear that today.
Probably not. I am rather shameless.
That's why we're here. Anyway, let's see. Next story. Do you guys have smart speakers? Well, Amazon again topped the sales in Q4. Something, you know, I don't know. What is it? They got 20-something%. I don't know. I didn't really read in depth in this article. This was kind of a really in-depth, you know, analysis of the sales and stuff, but just needless to say, yeah, 28%. So 28% worldwide.
28.3%.
28.3%. Yes. Yeah. And then Google's right behind them at 24 something. Mm-hmm. And Baidu, I guess that's the China version of that somehow. And there's a few other I never heard of. Look at the Apple way down at the bottom.
Don't you love that? It's just, that kind of cracks me up.
Yeah. You know, Apple's idea is cool. I get it, but
they're still a walled garden, though.
Yeah, and they're also very expensive compared to the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I got one in my car. You said you had one in your car,
and I have an Amazon Auto in my car. I do.
Yeah, and you know those things were, what are they, $25, something like that. You know, I've got an Echo Dot sitting here next to me, mm-hmm. into a Bose stereo, and you know it's it's awesome. And I think it cost me $25.
Exactly. I've got Echo Dots all over the house. I've got smart plugs now. And now that's plural. I used to have just one to turn the living room light on and off. But I've got, you know, we've got our Echo set up to our good speaker system. And it's just, it's lovely. And we can't underestimate the power of our laziness, basically.
Oh, yeah. It's great. My wife and I just got a bunch of smart bulbs. I guess Philips has the, you know, they have that Hue. Those were expensive, but now they have a cheaper one. I forget what they're called, but it's the bulbs all self-contained. You don't have to have a hub or anything. And I got that set up through, you know, the Echoes, and, you know, I can turn on my office lights and turn on the coffee, turn off the coffee.
Yeah. What I really, really love about the smart plugs is that I can turn my house lights off and on if I'm not home for a weekend from my phone.
Yep.
So it looks like I'm home.
Yeah, we do that too. We'll set it up, you know, we'll just randomly turn this one on for an hour, then turn that off, and then randomly turn on something else.
Yep. Yep.
And
it just keeps you safer.
Pretty cool. All right.
I have to say one more thing, though. I have to. Just speaking to our laziness, one of the things that Blueberry Pro Production offers its clients is help with building an Alexa skill so that their podcast is available on demand on Alexa.
Oh, yeah. That's handy for sure. I did that for one of my podcasts, but I made it a new skill. So, you know, it's a 2-minute a daily podcast. And for the local area up here, so nobody cares about it. But
people in the local area care about it.
Certainly, certainly. But, you know, I do that, and I, you know, I built a little skill myself, but that's not for everybody. So, yeah, awesome. All right, so let's get into best practice. And you came up with this one. We're going to talk about show notes.
Show notes. The underestimated engine of podcasts are show notes, and it's a powerful tool, and they're for getting traction and promoting a show. And we have a tool in place that helps podcasters get the most use out of absolutely every bit of their show. But show notes, and you know, there's all kinds of arguments about transcription and Google embedding transcripts into the metadata of your podcast and how that's going to make your show more searchable. It may help, but AI has not managed to master good transcripts. It doesn't take into account dialect, accents, slang, and all kinds of language variables.
Well, of course, we all don't talk like we write.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there's a lot of, you knows and ums and ahs and ands and all this stuff that really doesn't do you a lot of good in a transcript if that's what you're using to try to get, you know, some SEO.
Yeah.
We've always talked about, you know, write your show notes for Google.
Exactly.
Do your show for your audience because, you know, we're an audio format.
Right.
Almost nobody reads your show notes. You know, I mean, somebody will, obviously.
Somebody will, and people will go to those show notes to get those resources and links that you mention and those gifts that you want to give your listener. But from an SEO standpoint, for a traction standpoint for your show, the show notes are what does the heavy lifting. And they don't just do the heavy lifting for the SEO. Show notes are also eminently repurposable. And we do this for Blueberry Pro clients. We pull them apart and we make, I call it Instatwit face posts.
That's great.
I don't want to say all of it. So all of the Instatwit face, the LinkedIn posts, the quotes that we pull, the links that we pull, we turn those into social media posts. We can get up to 15 media assets for a single show note and use that as marketing for just that episode. And that doesn't take into account those things that we do audio posts for. So we'll create some custom art, we'll pull a quote from the show, or we'll invent with the show notes, we'll read some of the show notes into that audio post and embed that into the data of that post because it's an MOV file. When we have that MOV file with the show notes but embedded in that, that's even more traction. So it's really important that you have solid SEO-laden show notes for every single episode of your podcast. It's the engine behind your show's traction.
Right, and I'm going to beat the dead horse that I always beat. But write your show notes in the post. And that's it. You don't need a summary. You don't need all these extra things, and then trying to get all the different apps to show it the way you want to, it's just going to drive you nuts.
Yeah, anyway, don't worry about the apps, because podcatchers pull and push and have things appear the way they want them to, and you cannot make everybody happy.
Yeah, that's, you know, like I said, a lot of people just get so, you know, wrapped up in the details. Put all that detail effort into your audio.
Yeah.
And your, you know, your post on your site, you know, make it good for SEO. You know, like I said, Todd's famous for always saying, write it for Google, do your audio for your audience. And
True words were never spoken.
Right. And, you know, I really didn't understand that you guys over there at Blueberry Pro do all of that. That's awesome.
The only thing we want Blueberry Pro customers doing is recording their show and putting it into their folder. And then go and live your life. We do absolutely everything else.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's been great with you guys doing this show, because literally I do show prep. I record. I send you the file. And
you go live your life.
Mackenzie does the posts, and I just sort of do something else.
It's kind of fun being the talent, huh?
Yeah, but I don't get to do that on other shows I'm on, but hey.
Well, no, you got to pay your dues somewhere, honey.
Right. All right, so let's get to some blueberry-specific stuff. We'll get through this quick and get to our interview. We got a cool interview today.
Tell me everything.
Yeah, so Blueberry PowerPress 8.2.4 is out. You noticed last week we had daily releases because we found all kinds of bugs, but the dev team's been really good at squashing those bugs. They were all pretty minor. We have one more bug fix release coming soon, so look for 8.2.5. That's supposed to be out sometime soon. But like I said, none of these bugs were super big or anything, but just little convenience things. So definitely upgrade and keep up with us. 8.3 will be available for beta test, I'm guessing, sometime in about a couple weeks. So we'll let you know about that. Todd's going to be down at the Spark podcast conference in Houston. In fact, he's on an airplane right now as we speak. That's the Spark Christian podcast conference down in Houston, Texas. So if you're going to be down there, be sure to stop by the Blueberry booth and say hi to Todd. Anyway, also the team's getting ready to go to PodFest in Orlando. You heard Angelo last week. He's going. He normally doesn't go to those things. So he'll be down.
Wow. There. What's dragging Angelo out of his cave?
Hey, it's great. We want to get involved in the front side of podcasting. He's always back there, you know, pushing bits around and making all this stuff work. And
I think that's terrific.
So that's cool. But he'll be down there with Todd and Mackenzie. So
we'll be there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Anyway, go check them out down in Orlando. And, of course, we're getting ready to go to NAB show in Vegas in April. We'll have a lot more announcements about that. Definitely love the NAB show. That is like the hugest geek fest of gearheads. You know, that's more of a, you know, radio TV industry show. But they're bringing in a lot of podcasting stuff. So, all right. So you're a listener of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove podcast, I hear.
They're hilarious. They're Australians, and I love everything Australia, and we have several Australian clients. We don't have them. I want their show so bad. I want them to come let us produce them, but they do such a good job that I don't know what else we can offer them.
Right.
I'm not going to go listen to their show, because their intro, if for no other reason than to laugh your face off at their intro to the show. They have two different ones, and they are hilarious.
All right. Well, very good. So, yeah, that was Todd interviewed Trevor Bell from that podcast, The Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. We're going to drop that interview in right here.
I want to welcome Trevor Bell to Podcast Insider, and Trevor is hailing from Australia, so he is up early in the morning, and I'm at the end of the business day here in the United States, so I want to welcome you to the show, Trevor. Thanks for being with me, and why don't you introduce yourself and give a little 411 about your show?
Sure. Thanks, Todd. So my name is Trevor Bell, and I have a weekly podcast here in Australia with two of my friends, and the podcast is called The Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove, and We've been doing it for a little bit over 4 years. Pretty much every week, we might have missed one or two along the way. So we're up to episode 226. And it's a podcast where we talk about news and politics and events going on in the world, mainly focused on Australia. But if something happens internationally that's of interest, and there's obviously Brexit or things that Donald Trump does or things like that that affect Australia, we'll talk about them. And it's not just sort of three guys sitting around a microphone talking off the top of our heads. We do actually research the topics and try and provide a unique insight into what's happening. And maybe for people who don't have the time to keep up with the news, who don't have the time to research and read, we're sort of doing that reading. And in an hour and a half, we sort of give people the lowdown on what's happened in the week that's just passed. And kind of like if you're then standing around a water cooler on a Monday morning with your work colleagues, or maybe you've gone to you're at a dinner party and a topic of conversation comes up about a current affairs, you'll know enough to sort of get by and provide some interesting and informative comments. So that's kind of what we're aiming to do, is keep people up to date and informed, and with a sort of a quirky take on something, if it's at all possible. So that's the sort of elevator pitch for a long elevator ride, if you like.
You know what I like about these shows, these types of shows, the best is that I don't have to watch television to get caught up on what's going on in the world. Be honest with you, I don't watch much television now because it's gotten pretty toxic here in America. So for me, it's just better for my mental health not to watch. So I think that for me, a show like this is one of those things where you can get your fill in one fell swoop of what's been happening. So I have to ask though, the show name, the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove, what prompted that name?
Yeah, naming is tricky, and I may have made a crucial mistake. I'm not sure. There's a couple of theories with podcasts, isn't there? Like, you could have a descriptive name that says what you're doing. Like, one of your shows is the Geek News Podcast.
Yeah,
so that sort of tells the story of what it's about. So I could have called it the News and Politics Podcast or something like that. At the time, though, when we started it sort of 4.5 years ago, I was involved in a small political party, and my colleague and I ran for a Senate position in our local state. And it was a minor micro party that was particularly focused on looking at what religion is doing in terms of its interference in politics. And that's a notion of secularism, so the separation of church and state. And so we were really keen on that topic in the early days, but I didn't want to call it the Secular Podcast or something like that, because I also knew that we might change and we might evolve into something else, and I didn't want something that was going to define us narrowly if we changed tack, which we kind of did. So the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove, you'll hear it used, I think of it, it's used particularly to give the idea of something that's forceful but with a soft edge.
Nice.
So we would have strong opinions, but we would say it politely and without being rude. There you go. So, and I was sort of I'm called the Iron Fist. That's my nickname. And Scott, my colleague, is the Velvet Glove. And I'm usually the one with the hard sort of opinion, and Scott's usually the one who's a little bit more diplomatic. So it kind of fits in with that as well.
Yeah, I've got a co-host that we kind of work in the same mantra almost. I'm kind of the hammer and he's kind of the, you know, he's the kind of, as you would say, the velvet glove. So what, you know, so you were running for an office, and so what was really the point in which you said we need to do a show? You know, you obviously the show name came later, but there was a decision that you made to do the podcast, and how did you come up with that?
Well, I was listening to a lot of podcasts. So I had a job where I was driving around a lot, so I had plenty of time to listen to things, and radio had driven me crazy. I couldn't stand FM, I couldn't stand AM anymore, and so I discovered podcasts. Here in Australia, we've got the ABC, which is kind of the equivalent of your NPR and British BBC. So they would transfer a lot of their programs to podcasts, some of the more interesting ones. And so I was listening to a lot and I was thinking, these are great. I reckon I can do one of these. And as a small political party, we just couldn't get any traction in the media. There was no way for us to sort of be known in any sense or let our views be known other than to write it in a blog post. So First, it was really an option to sort of one way where if we were talking to people, we could say, well, listen to this podcast and that tells you what we're about. So that was kind of what it was. And just the challenge, because I was listening to so many podcasts and I thought, that looks like fun and I think I can do that. And I had a bit of time. My kids have grown up and one way to fill up your time, Todd, as you would know, is to start a podcast. That'll chew it up.
Yeah, it definitely will. So when you guys got started with the show, how did you oftentimes I ask hosts that have you said there was three of you, right, that do the show?
Yeah.
How did you come together with a schedule? How did you hold to that? Because it's hard, you know, everyone has different things going on in their life.
Yeah, we sort of fell into a pattern where basically just as I'm reading stuff through the week or watching things or seeing things, I would just often just take a newspaper article or a web article or something and just start a list. And by Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, I'd have a list of topics which I would send to the other guys and say, well, here's the agenda, and we meet on a Tuesday night and we run through the agenda that I've basically set. But the other two guys are obviously just reading stuff along the way as well, so they're sort of up to speed with these topics. So we've just fallen into a pattern where, you know, as I'm just reading things, whether it's Facebook or the news, I'm deciding, is that a good topic or not, and putting it aside on a running list that I have and sending it out every Sunday, and we talk about it every Tuesday. So we've got into a routine. The other two guys don't have family commitments, so their time is pretty free as well. So they're able to come to my house on a Tuesday night and do it. So that's kind of how we've fallen into it. And you get into a routine. I think you talk about a battle rhythm or something like that. Yeah. Well, we're kind of in that routine. And we enjoyed it. Like last night we had a special guest over as well who lived in Brisbane. So there's four of us sitting around and we went for 2 hours. And at the end of it, we were just going, wasn't that great fun? Like we really just enjoyed it. So even if Todd, even if nobody was listening, we would still do it because it's just a fun thing to do. And we enjoy the discussions.
I think that is key. You know, as long as you're having fun as a group and it's a time to get together, and you know that way it's not work. It's, you know, you're having a great time doing it, and you know, if nothing else, maybe have a few beers afterwards. You know, that's always good too. So from the starting of the show, then how has your audience reaction been on your guys' take of the news and events happening there in Australia?
Yeah. So what we get is a typical comment from our listeners, you know, our patrons who support us would be, we don't agree with everything that you say, but we appreciate that you've come at it honestly in what you've said. So that was a typical comment and feedback we get is, love the show, enjoy the conversations, don't agree with everything you say, but appreciate that you've come at it with honest intentions and with valid reasons, if you like. So That's the thing. I think people enjoy hearing alternative views, and sometimes we'll just one of us will take a devil's advocate role. So, you know, the worst thing that could happen would be if the three of us just constantly agreed on things. So just as a debating sort of tactic, one of us will put their hand up and play devil's advocate and try and give the other side. So I think that's the feedback, is that people appreciate that side. And also, you know, Todd, it seems today that, like, if you were to go to a dinner party and talk about news and politics, sex and religion, people would go, what are you doing? You can't talk about these topics.
Right.
So people actually enjoy hearing a conversation now because it's sort of not allowed anymore in many circumstances. And one of our key, big fans, he runs a sort of an amateur running group. He knows hundreds of people, but he can't get a conversation started about news and politics, sex and religion, because people say, oh, I just don't want to talk about that. So he enjoys the podcast because we do. Mm.
Yeah, I recently had lunch with somebody and they started in on the political discussion. I'm just like, stop. We're probably already going to agree to disagree with each other. Let's not even get into it. Let's just, you know, used to have a good conversation like that. And, I like the devil's advocate position because my grandfather, God rest his soul, oh my God, he was a master of it. And you wouldn't even know. And he'd get in a topic going And I kind of learned as I was getting older, I kind of clued into it when he did it, but he'd be in a group of four or five guys and they would be, you know, he was a farmer. So they'd be sitting around chewing tobacco or whatever they were doing. And they would get into a topic of discussion and then he would veer right or left. And I would think to myself, I know, and you know, I'm thinking, what is he saying? I know he doesn't think that way, but he would play the role of devil's advocate and they would get into, you know, it would get lively. So I think that it's good that you do that because those conversations where people are actually having different views these days almost can't happen. Isn't it sad that we can't have differing views and still be friends? Because people now get so pissed off, they'll say, oh, you think that way? I don't want, you know, they don't even want to associate you with you anymore. So that's why we can't have these conversations. People can't leave their feelings at the door.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of one of the unique parts of the podcast, I think, is that we manage to provide differing opinions and people are happy with that. The other thing, Todd, is with podcasting, the thing I like is, like you're mentioning your grandfather, and one of the things I think about with the podcast is I don't know what my grandfather was like. Like I don't, you know, I was too young when my grandfather's passed away, but with doing the podcast, I like to think that at some stage in 50 years' time, these recordings will still be available for my great-grandchildren and they'll be able to listen and they'll go, oh, that's what granddad was like. That was, you know, it's just a good way of passing on to your ancestors or to, you know, your descendants, sorry, what sort of person you were. They'll get to know you as a person if they get the chance to listen to these recordings.
We would hope they would. Maybe, you know, it's going to be those unique individuals that are digging into the genealogy and you say, oh man, he had a podcast. Let me listen to. So I think I would hope that, you know, 100 years from now or even 50, like you said, someone's going to tune in and say, well, what was his thoughts of the time? So I think you're right on that aspect. So how is your audience then? I guess I don't know if I've got into this. I'm sorry if I did, but how's your audience response been?
So, well, we've got about 500 regular listeners. So it's a weekly podcast. And according to the sort of Apple statistics, it seems that most people average sort of listening is about 85 to 90%. And the typical podcast goes for an hour and a half. So I reckon that's a pretty good response. I think that shows commitment if you're going to listen to that much to, you know, it's what we're doing is worthwhile.
Sure.
We don't do any advertising, but we have patrons. So we've got about 55 patrons, and that to me is a pretty good sort of ratio of patrons to listeners. And I think, would you agree, Todd? Do you think that's a high ratio? Is there any industry standard on patrons to listeners?
You know, I think if you get 10%, you're knocking it out of the ballpark.
Right. I would have thought so.
Yeah. I think if you're getting any higher than that, like, I want to talk to you about how you're doing that.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Yeah. I talked to James Cridlin because James actually lives in my town here in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. So he's attends our local podcast meetups and things. He thought maybe 1% would be about normal. So well, on our podcast, I have a slightly left-wing leaning, and one of the things that we're saying on the podcast often when we're talking about tax or something is, you know, these are things you need for civilization. It's about contributing to the society in a fair and meaningful way is a typical theme. And so one of the things I say is with the podcast, nothing's paywalled. It's open to anybody. You're welcome to listen to 20 to 25 episodes and decide whether you like it or not. And if at the end of those 20 or 25 episodes, you're really hooked and you can't wait for the podcast to come out and you're checking your app and waiting for it to be downloaded and then you listen to it straight away, I say, if you reach that position, then we expect you to contribute at least a dollar a week.
Right.
And if you're only fading in and out, you're only catching us occasionally and you don't, you know, it's not that important to you, fair enough, don't pay. But I say if you reach that point of 20 to 25 and you're hooked, then we just expect a dollar. And if you don't think it's worth a dollar, then I want you to reach for your app now and hit the delete button. Like stop, because really this is all we can do. And I also refer to the honesty box. So you would probably have them in a staff room or something like that where something is offered for, you know, is out for on a shelf and it's like, take one if you like, it's an honesty box, put your money in and off you go. And I say, you would never take that item and not put money in the honesty box. And I say, well, think of this podcast and my request right now as a sort of an honesty box situation. And so that gives me a good response. So, and I like that it's not paywalled, and I like that people could go back through all 226 episodes and dip in and out. So that's sort of how actually telling people to delete the show is a unique concept. You probably have never heard that before, Todd, but that's how you get a sort of a 10% ratio.
You know, I tell my audience, hey, this is only 6.7 cents a day to support it at the lowest tier. I said, if I'm not worth 6.7 cents, come on, you know. So, but that's a new tact. I may have to start saying that. If I'm not worth $2 a month, you know, then, you know, tell me to pack sand and unsubscribe, you know. And that might be a good tact to try. I think I like that.
Okay.
You know, that's good. So, you know, I do, I don't necessarily do a Patreon. I do just a PayPal link. And I put the PayPal link up on the site long before Patreon was even in existence. And I give them the option of $2, $5, $10, $15, $20, or $25 a month. And we do have some folks that come in at $25. And, you know, I really love those contributors. I wish I had a whole bunch of them. But I even tell the audience, I say, you know, and my show is sponsor supported. So I can't expect them to donate as much being that it is. And I tell them, I'm like, listen, you know, your contributions go directly back into the show. We use that for bloggers. We use that for any of the bills. So, you know, so it's, you know, we spend it all because the number of contributors coming in doesn't even come close to covering it. But I think that, you know, it's your tact there with, going back to my original thought, if I had every listener of my show give me $2, then I could really almost like retire and just do podcasting. I wouldn't have to work for Blueberry, but even though I would. So we've talked about your genesis, what you get from your audience, what's coming from your audience. What's this doing for you? How is this opened up any doors? Are you guys now becoming celebrities? What's happening?
Well, no, we're not celebrities. That would be nice. You know, it's a passion project, and you know, it's we're not niche enough to break through, I think, and become celebrities because there's so many, you know, mainstream news media talking about news and politics. So we've got to keep our expectations realistic. But the fans that we do have give us lots of feedback, and they comment a lot. In terms of things I've gained, just increased personal knowledge, Todd, because, you know, I might think I understand a topic, like I might think, oh, I've got a handle on Brexit, for example. Let's next week talk about Brexit. But then when you actually have to explain it to people, you realize, oh, actually, I don't understand that part, or I don't understand that. So you end up researching things and understanding topics a lot better when you have to explain them. So so I understand the world a lot more than I did before. And my day job is as a sales rep selling art supplies wholesale. So, you know, I've got regular customers who I visit, and that's a lot of sort of relationship building and charming people as much as sort of the products. And just the practice of talking for 90 minutes every week into a microphone has really helped with my skills just as a communicator. Like, I was always a reasonable communicator, but now I'm just, I used to try and hurry things along too much, but now I settle into a conversation with people and I've got a lot more sort of anecdotes, or I think my sort of conversational sales spiel in my day job has actually improved through the practice of talking on a podcast. Hmm. So,
do you think?
And I'm just enjoying the whole, you know, different technical challenges that we've been doing lately. So we've just, inspired by your podcast, Todd, we've started doing some live video streaming of it as well. So,
oh, you went there.
Yeah. And I recommend that to people. If they've got a podcast that lends itself to a live stream, then the people get on and they comment, Todd, as you know, like, you might just do an ordinary post, you know, my podcast is up, check it out. But when you're doing a live stream, people get on and they comment, and you get a lot more reach because of that interaction that happens. Yeah. And it's fun because, you know, we'll be talking about a topic and At some point, we might say, "Oh, I don't know what the story is on that," and then we'll move on. But in the comments section, somebody's Googled it and provided the answer, or they've given feedback, and so I actually really like the feedback side of it. And I was listening to, I think in terms of the future of the podcast, I think the video parts of it will be big, will be helpful, because we unfortunately might deal with like 12 different topics in a 90-minute episode. And with the video, I'm thinking if I chop them up into little segments, the more evergreen ones, that's something I can sort of promote via YouTube and things like that. So that's sort of the idea down the track, is some of the more evergreen topics might get chopped up and promoted, you know, that way.
You know, it reminds me, last night I was doing my show, my regular tech show, and I heard a Virgin Galactic had went public. So as you know, as I was talking, and we were up on Facebook Live, I'm down here in the studio in Columbus, so I was only up on StreamYard, and I said to the audience, I said, "So what is that stock priced at now?" Because I didn't have really a time to look at it. And someone looked it up and says it's 1301, and it made me pause. And I said, 1301? I said, you know, there's a lot of stock that's been introduced in the stock market that's coming at $200-$300 or some really insane value that is really out of the reach of the average Joe to be even to go in and buy. And I said, well, if it's 1301, I said, this stock is going to do two things. It's either going to die when they kill somebody in a space launch, or this thing is going to go through the roof after they've done 20 successful launches. I said, I think that I'm going to take $1,000 and buy $13, you know, buy that stock at 1301 and roll the dice. And I asked my audience, how many of you are with me? We go, you know, I, of course, made a disclaimer. I'm not an investor. You know, what are you guys going to do? So I'll see what the audience response is from the next show. But it's that same thing. It's that little bit of live interaction that still will translate and allow the listening audience not to feel that they've gotten lost and something that's descriptive that they had to actually see. So, and I've said this a number of times, is if you're going to do live, don't forget that people are using their earballs, not their eyeballs, for 90% of the time that are subscribed to you. So you can alienate them real quick if you show an article or something like that and you don't describe it, because then they're going to feel like they're left out. And that's the last thing you want to do. But the live is fun. And I think that's what it keeps things, in my opinion, it just gives you, you know, when I was doing the show in Hawaii, I actually had more people from Australia coming in and watching the show than I did from the United States and or from the lower 48. And so for me, it was kind of funny. Now that I'm out here on the East Coast, I'm getting the East Coast folks that watch the show. And, you know, I don't get the Australians anymore because they're in bed or actually, and you're not in bed, actually just getting ready to go to work. So, yeah, I think the live has a component here. I think more and more people are starting to figure that out. But, you know, you have to be more prepped for live, because once you say it, you can't edit it. It's there. So has it helped you in your production, or did you do a lot of editing before?
No, we don't really edit. I just top and tail it. So just, and I think I would have stopped podcasting a long time ago if I was editing. I don't know how people can do it. Chopping out ums and ahs and that, it would drive me crazy. It would become a chore. It would not be fun. So it's a conversation, and people are not expecting, you know, an NPR level of production. And I know some people with this sort of interview sort of podcast really, you know, work hard on the production, but good luck to them. I couldn't do that. It would lose its sense of fun for me and become hard work. So we just top and tail it usually, and maybe chop out one mistake or something like that if there's something obvious, but otherwise we let it go. Yeah,
and I'm the same way. If I say something really stupid or really blow something, I'll take out the article, but otherwise it's, you know, cut the ends, do a little audio processing on it, and I'm done. And the same thing with the video. You know, the video is even less chopped because it's already out there live and I don't worry about it. So yeah, and I'm in the same boat as you. And I just passed 15 years of podcasting, and I would have quit in year two or even year one or maybe the year 2 months if I would have had to have edit. I may not have been married. I might have been divorced because of editing. So I think that there's two sides to this. Some people just can't let the product go without editing, but some do. So are you unique in the in doing a new show? Is there a lot of, you know, the podcast space in Australia is definitely growing. And, you know, we just heard about the recent event that happened down there, your big podcasting event sponsored by, you know, ABC Australia. Do you think that podcasts are gaining a foothold down there? Or is, you know, you've been doing, the people have been doing shows down there for a long time, but is it getting better or bigger?
Look, I think it's dominated by the radio stations. So as I mentioned, the ABC puts out a lot of their material in podcasts, and some of the commercial radio stations, there's a couple of guys called Hamish and Andy who had a very very popular radio drive sort of program, very funny guys, and they've also had some TV sort of special programs. They've crossed over into podcasting, so that's sort of got people that way. But it seems to me to be sort of dominated a little bit by the sort of radio branch. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of the indie podcasters, you don't hear a lot. I don't know of too many news and politics sort of conversational podcasts like ours, for example. I know of one or two that seem to be as small as ours, I think. So, you know, there is room if people can find us and find out about us. I mean, I spent a lot of time looking at content, but not nearly enough in terms of marketing. And so the plan is to, you know, chop up some of the YouTube videos. Also, I haven't done a lot of interviews comparatively over the years, and one reason was I just had a terrible internet connection where I am, and I was always just nervous about whether it would be strong enough and whether we were going to have these technical difficulties. Right. But I've just got a fresh internet connection that's much better, so I'm feeling more confident that if I get some more leaders of free thought groups like the Humanists and other groups like that on, then that'll help sort of expand us into people who haven't heard about us before. Yeah.
You know, I just moved from an area where I had a real good internet to the country where I have horrible internet. Of course, I have good internet at the office in both locations, but boy, it really is painful to go backwards. It really, you know, it's striking how much dependency you have on high speed. And when you're moving up in speed, it's always fantastic. But when you move down, it's just a total life suck. It really, really is. So yep. We're close here to the end. What's the best way for folks to find your show? What's a good, you know, email, social, what's the best way for them to find you?
Sure. If they just Google Iron Fist Velvet Glove podcast, they'll find our website, and there's links to all of our, social media stuff on there. And, obviously all the podcasts and the videos. So, different little articles as well of interest are there, different blog posts. So just Iron Fist Velvet Glove podcast, and hopefully we come up. You should find us, I think, that way.
I would think you would be number one in that search result.
Right. Thanks.
Well, Trevor, I want to thank you. Of course, tell the rest of your team good luck with the show, of course. And then thanks for coming on The Insider. It's been great get some insights of what's going on down in Australia and, of course, the show down there. And much continued success to you.
Thanks, Todd.
And thanks for being on. All right, folks, back to the programming on Podcast Insider.
All right, and then we'll do some support stuff. Not a whole lot there. And, of course, we're going to do Sean's PowerPress Tip of the Week, which we restarted last week. A really old episode. It had music in it, so. This time, no music, or at least no music that Sean put in it.
No, we're gonna do something different with that.
Cool. So, all right. The only big thing that I had here was we've been noticing a lot of people, you know, moving their shows around. You know, they want to go to a different website. They want to rebrand. They want to change their domain name. You know, they want to go from, say, you know, they're doing WordPress, and for whatever reason, they want to switch to using our Blueberry publisher or vice versa, which is the way we'd like them to go. But, you know, a lot of things get changed around, but you can't just willy-nilly change stuff without doing everything in a particular order. And don't get rid of the old until the new is in place. And a lot of people get in a big hurry to do this whole rebranding thing. And, you know, rebranding itself is a whole different subject. But, you know, as far as the technical stuff, just go slow, ask somebody, ask us, you know, we'll help you. Or we may try to talk you out of it, depending on what you want to do. But, you know, just go slow with it. So many times I get people that move domain names. They get rid of the old website, the old domain name, and then wonder why their podcast doesn't update anymore. Well, it's because the feed was coming from that old place, and you didn't do anything to get it to move to the new place. So please, please contact us. Go slow. Don't do anything until you know exactly what you're doing. And I personally and everybody else in the support team would be happy to help you out. And as far as rebranding, we've rebranded this show, what, 3 times now?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, this was a PowerPress podcast, and then we added your podcast as a secondary show, and then we combined them together, put them on podcastinsider.com, all kind of standalone, and then we just lately moved it to Blueberry as a subpage on Blueberry. So we've moved this thing around, and I don't think any of you guys noticed other than, the name of the show changed a couple times, but nothing else changed. You were still subscribed and all that, and we can do that for you too.
It's excellent to have that kind of technical support, and never, ever underestimate the power of the redirect.
Oh, yeah. You have to do the redirect. There's no option.
No way around it. No way around it. Unless you like losing your subscribers.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's your thing, then carry on. But most people don't like losing their subscribers.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. You know, if you do it all right, nobody will even notice that you moved.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you want them to notice that you moved, there's a way to do that. Can I talk about rebranding?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah? Certainly. Go for it.
So this is going to seem rather scripted, but there's just a few things to consider. And the first is your existing audience. If you're rebranding your show, continue to speak to them or you'll lose that traction that you gained. If you're moving to a new genre or topic, it might be wise to keep the existing show and begin teasing the new show on that existing show and generate that buzz and excitement. Make a trailer, like a movie trailer, but for audio for the new show, and sample it in episodes and invite people to subscribe when the teaser is released before that new show even starts. If you're scrapping your existing show and starting fresh, leave your existing feed and start a new feed for the new show. Use the old feed to drive traffic to the new show by inserting ads for the new show in the content posting and weekly snippets. That way you can keep both shows and drive traffic either way. That's one way people do it. But as always, give your listeners plenty of warning about the cessation of an old show and tease the premiere of the new show and offer your existing listener base something to entice them. A free download, a discount on a service that you offer, whatever works for you. But whatever you do, don't just end and then begin again. That's a bit of a credibility killer, and it'll cost you in the long run. So another shameless plug, if you're rebranding your show, shout out at Blueberry Pro. We can help you with those marketing efforts to get the best amount of subscribers to your new feed, to keep the most amount of ears on your show if you're rebranding an existing feed. And also feel free to visit the website and learn more about that at blueberrypro.com. That's the end of my long-winded commercial.
Well, like I said, we don't want to be an infomercial, but
yeah, hey, I hate infomercials.
You guys do great work over there. So we're not
going to. Thanks. And people work really hard on their shows. And when they need to change tack or pivot, I want them to be able to keep their audience, and I want them to be able to do it in the most strategic way possible between the help that support can give them on the technical side of Blueberry and the production side.
Right. Well, this isn't really support, but here's kind of the other thing as far as rebranding. If you're just rebranding and the show is going to be roughly about the same subjects and all that stuff, then just rebranding the current show and keeping all your subscribers is a good idea. But if you're going to pivot from, you're talking about baseball and then the new show is going to be about auto racing, well, that's two different audiences there. So, don't redirect somebody that's listening to a baseball podcast to an auto racing podcast. That's true. Just tell them about it. But
that's where the teasers come in and invite them to subscribe to your auto racing show.
Exactly. All right, one more quick thing here about artwork. I've been having a lot of problems with people with artwork. They make their artwork. It's why Apple says they need 3,000 by 3,000, and I get this, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 megabyte file. That doesn't work. No, it still has to be under 500 kilobytes in size. That's half of a megabyte. It, you know, and that's a guideline. You can go a little above that, and it usually doesn't cause a lot of problems. But think about it. People are looking at that image on their phone. And it's going to be 1 inch by 1 inch, maybe 1.5 inches by 1.5 inches. The oddballs that listen to it on their TV, they might see it at, you know, 40 inches on their, you know, big screen TV. But, you know, you can't please everybody.
There's only three people that do that anyway, so don't worry about them.
Exactly. So, you know, just the whole thing is it has to be exactly square. I mean, if it's 1400 by 1401 pixels, it's going to get rejected everywhere. It has to be square. And also, you know, a little bit of really geekery, and you know, I used to be a graphic artist by trade, the image, you can do either JPEG or PNG. PNG is really good if you're doing a graphical image, which what I mean by that is 2, 3, 4 colors, no vignettes or, you know, these continuous tone things. But, you know, just say you got your logo in a white background and it's, you know, your logo's got 2, 3, 4 colors in it, the PNG is going to be a smaller file. But if you got a picture, a literal picture, we call it a continuous tone, that kind of picture is better as a JPEG. So try it both ways. You know, save it both directions and see which one's smaller. Use the smallest one.
That's excellent advice. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, well, I spent 20 years in graphic arts before I started working here. So
you'll be hearing from me. Because we need more people on our team to help with album art.
Hey, there you go. Well, I can certainly do some album art, although I'm not a creative artist. I'm what you call a mechanical artist.
That's fine. Yeah. We have the creative side. You guys are the mechanical side.
There you go.
It's a marriage made in heaven.
Hot diggity. All right. So let's play Sean's PowerPress tip of the week.
This is Sean Thorpe from the Blueberry support team with this week's PowerPress tip. Blueberry recently released version 8.2 of PowerPress. This update removed the Episodes tab from PowerPress settings and also brought some noticeable changes to the podcast episode box. In previous versions of PowerPress, the podcast episode box appeared as a series of fields determined by the options that were selected in the Episodes tab. The new episode box has all of the same functionality as before, but now everything is available in the episode box by default. Any functions you feel you don't need can just be skipped over. When publishing a new episode, the first thing you'll see is a prompt to attach podcast media or enter URL. If you're a Blueberry Media hosting customer, and you've linked your WordPress installation to your Blueberry subscription, click the Select File button to choose the media file you'd like to publish. Otherwise, copy and paste the URL to your media file into the empty field and click the Continue button. The episode box will then expand with your media file at the top and a series of links and tabs below. If there's something wrong with the media file you selected in the previous step, use the Change Media and Verify Link buttons to fix it. Under most circumstances, PowerPress will be able to automatically determine the file size and duration of your media files. You can double-check this and make changes by clicking the View File Size and Duration link. The Episode Info tab contains optional settings for episode title and description. Leaving those fields blank will use the blog title and show notes you created in the blog entry window above the podcast episode box. Leave Not Set as the explicit setting unless you need to mark this specific episode as either clean or explicit. You can enter an Apple Podcasts specific title for this episode into the title field and also enter your episode and season numbers if desired. Click the See More Settings link to access other optional settings you can use to further customize your episode. The Episode Artwork tab is where you can set episode level artwork, and if you're publishing a video, you can also upload a thumbnail image for the video player. The Website Display tab has some settings that under most circumstances you'll want to leave alone, but you can choose to disable the media player or media links that would normally display on your website if needed. You can also add a player code into the Media Embed field if you'd like to use a third-party media player for this episode on your website. The Advanced tab can be ignored unless you want to use the Metamarks feature. Once you've got all of your episode settings in place, just publish your post in the same way you've always done. And that's it for this week's PowerPress tip. If you have any questions about this or anything else in the Blueberry universe, email support@blueberry.com.
All right. Well, that about does it. Jeez, Kate, we seemed to get through the whole show, and we didn't argue about anything. And
I was really trying hard not to argue.
I didn't expect we would. But so it's all good. And thanks for being here. This has been great.
This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this. Let's do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to get you back on here. Let's see. You can get a hold of me, mike@blueberry.com. You can get a hold of Mackenzie or Todd with mackenzie@blueberry.com, todd@blueberry.com. And of course, Kate is what? Kate@blueberrypro.com, right?
Yep.
I dig it. I got it right.
All right. I'm not surprised.
All right. So everybody have a great week. Next week, Todd should be back, and I fully expect he's going to have a lot to say about some of these announcements that were made for the last couple of conferences, and it should be a good show.
Looking forward to hearing those. Have a great day, Mike.